you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Giants Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco Giants Insider, Alex Pavlovich.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Giants Insider Podcast. So about a month ago, I was in studio. I was supposed to go back to Scottsdale in a few days, and I popped into the studio to film our season preview show with Kelly Johnson and Randy Wynn, and it was a lot of fun, and we talked a lot about what I had seen in camp and talked about the fifth starter battle and how they would overcome an injury to Tyler Beatty that at the time looked pretty concerning, and who the closer would be if Tony Watson wasn't ready, and who the backup infielders would be if Pablo Sandoval wasn't ready for opening day. Just all of that. I mean, a lot of baseball, and we had a lot of fun. And, you know, within a couple of days, it became clear that all of that was going to change. And within a couple of weeks, it became clear that it would be months before we had baseball back. So an interesting time, but we decided to get back together for this week's podcast and talk a little bit about Randy's career and what Randy's up to right now and how he would handle this if he were a player. He was somebody who is very involved right now with retired players and some of that stuff. So I was curious to see what kind of questions he would be asking if he were still a player. And then, of course, went over his career, had some really good times for the Giants and played with a lot of really good players. So I thought that was interesting, talking to him about his memories about Barry Bonds and Albert Pujols and guys like that. So hope you guys enjoy the conversation. If you missed it, Tuesday's podcast was me and Gabe Kapler. And I asked the manager what they've been up to, how they are trying to train during all this, how they are trying to keep in touch with players and get better and find a way to make use of the downtime. So the podcast this week, Gabe Kapler and Randy Wynn. Hope you guys enjoy them.
All right, so here we are again, guys, because it was exactly 4 weeks ago that we were together in studio shooting the Giants preview show that obviously never aired. It was that night that the NBA shut down, and the following days, the MLB and, of course, NHL. So it feels like a year to me. I don't know about you, Randy, but what has life been like in Shea Wynn, which, by the way, looks like a club, and I would like to have an invite at some point in time when we can come out of our homes again.
Well, this is not a club. It's just like everybody else. We are enjoying distance learning and the kids on computers and all that fun stuff. But yeah, just trying to enjoy the time and hang out with the kids as much as I can.
Yeah, I was going to say when Kelly brought up the season preview show, I thought we killed it. So it was such a good show. It'll never air now. Everything's going to be completely different.
No.
I do agree. I think that was some of our best work.
People will just have to trust us on that one. Randy, we asked Sean this, and he said he's not the teacher in his house, but have you become a teacher over the last 3 weeks?
Yes. Yes, I have. And I think the real heroes are the teachers in this whole thing. It's not easy, and especially when it's your own kids, but you get a new appreciation for having to deal with, in my case, you know, 26, 10-year-olds. it's not the easiest thing. But, you know, on the flip side, got to see a little bit about, like, how my kid learns, which you don't always get to see, which is just an interesting aside from all this.
Yeah, what is your because your kids are just old enough to actually have real homework. So what's your best subject and your worst subject in helping them?
Easy. Best subject, math. You know, I love things that are straightforward and black and white. I'm not really the best writer, so English and writing and those are not my strengths, but those are my wife's strengths, so it works out.
Oh, good balance there. Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people say the math has changed since when we went through school. Like no one understands it.
Yeah, to say that it's changed from like how I learned, I mean, just from simple as doing multiplication, completely flipped in terms of how teachers are teaching it. And I, you know, they're trying to do a better job, and so that every style learner is able to comprehend and learn, which I'm a big fan of. But, you know, when that's not the way you learn, it's really tough to teach it that way.
You know, I think it's good that we started talking about your kids because you are a father. And the one thing that stood out to me this week when that report came out about Major League Baseball and quarantining and putting all 30 teams in Arizona was that I thought about how many Giants have kids and how many Giants have kids who are 2 years old, 4 years old. You know, some players, like Garrett Cole is going to have a baby this summer. I think Mike Trout's going to have a baby this summer. What was your reaction to that? And particularly that part where potentially asking players to spend 4 months in a hotel and maybe away from their families.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I applaud Major League Baseball for being forward thinking. I mean, you definitely have to have contingency plans for whenever this thing ends. You know, if tomorrow this thing ends and we're able to go back to normal life, you've got to be prepared for that. And I think what they're doing is saying, listen, if, you know, May 1st, we're able to resume sporting events and group gatherings, then this is the best way we see going forward. I definitely think it's interesting. It's going to be tough for people to live in hotels, but you know, I would assume that there's a lot of rentals and vacation rentals that people would be able to come up with homes or something a little bit more comfortable than just a hotel.
I mean, they were talking obviously about, you know, being able to utilize all the spring training facilities in addition to Chase Field where the Diamondbacks play. But I mean, spring training in Arizona is one thing, but playing in the dead heat of the summer is another, especially if we're doing 7-inning doubleheaders. I mean, to me, and having players in the stands was like the craziest idea because stands are as hot as I get. But you want to social distance. Oh, that was where I was like, how is that going to work?
Yeah. And if you look at the way that things have changed, even with rookie ball, you know, rookie ball that they play in Arizona or Florida, two of the hottest places traditionally during the summer in the United States, they've had to shift when they play games. Before it was kind of early morning games, 1 o'clock, then that was just too hot. Then they started doing 10 o'clock, which is still too hot. And so they were doing a lot of night games. And, you know, there's not, thankfully, because there wouldn't be travel, you'd be able to do night games when theoretically it's a bit cooler. There's not going to be a whole lot of early work or anything going on during the day, but I think you just have to make the best of what the situation allows. And that would be the best because in Florida, there's not really a location where you have that many teams and that many stadiums and that much access in the state. So, you know, if you're looking logistically, Arizona is the best option.
If you were a player right now and you had your player rep call you, or you had Tony Clark call you, what would you be asking him? What would be at the top of your list of concerns about coming back?
Well, I think the concerns just around the virus and, you know, understanding how it spreads and how social distancing would affect being on a team, right? I mean, I think that's the big thing, being around a group, bunch of guys that, not that you don't know where they've been, but people that have been off in different states and different environments. So how does that affect the potential for me to get sick and catch the virus? So making sure that not only Major League Baseball, but the Players Association had a firm plan in place to make sure that we are all, you know, remaining safe. And then beyond that, all right, what's the time frame? Because, as you know, if we're talking as a player, I got to get ready. If this is my season, my livelihood, my career, I don't want to show up unprepared going into a season. You know, if you're a free agent, if you're a guy that signed a minor league deal, you want to know absolutely the date that you need to be ready. And, you know, beyond that, are we going to have a spring training? Like what means are we going to have as an organization, as a team, as an individual to get ready for this season?
Yeah, there's a lot to figure out, obviously, in the schedule and how you rework a schedule if it's a shortened season, whether fans are even going to be allowed. A lot of fans are upset about the idea of baseball being played without them in the stands.
Let me say this real quick. I agree with that, but I think at this point, I would take any sort of live sporting event that I could watch, you know. Yeah, I would love to be in the stands, but, I mean, give me some baseball, give me some golf, give me something live on TV that I can watch. And I think people would appreciate that. And that, you know, if you compare this, it doesn't compare to 9/11, but in terms of being a player and being off for a period of time and having to get ready again. You know, when baseball was able to resume, people really enjoyed having that escape from the tragedy. And I think
right.
if you were able to attend a game or watch a game on TV, that would be the escape from, you know, the situation that's going on.
Very true. It's something we can all celebrate, enjoy, that we all love kind of together. And we would obviously get to be in studio, hopefully, and broadcast around those games with Crane Post Game. So I know we want to talk about your career, but I want to go all the way back to Santa Clara, where you walked on the basketball team. You ended up playing basketball and baseball and then going baseball full time. But you walk on with Steve Nash. You're a point guard. He's a point guard. How exactly, what was your mindset when you showed up and you saw this guy from Canada that, you know, was a star and you were a great high school player? At what point in time did you decide baseball? How did that shift into baseball being your focus?
Yeah, I'll give you the short version of all that. But when I showed up on campus, you know, Steve and I are the same year. Steve was not future NBA Hall of Famer, multi-time All-Star Steve Nash. He was Steve Nash from Victoria, British Columbia. He was not really highly recruited. He was offered exactly one division college scholarship. So when he showed up, nobody really knew, you know, what he was about. Everybody sure learned pretty quickly that, you know, he was a heck of a player. But it was a lot of fun playing with him. You know, how he played in the NBA is a lot like he played in college. You know, we didn't play at that fast pace, but in terms of being unselfish and being able to shoot the ball, he could always do those things. And just a tremendously hard worker. He really got better every single year from his, you know, between freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, to the point where I remember looking and thinking, wow, you know, this guy could play at the next level. So, you know, it was a lot of fun to be able to say that, you know, I had a chance to share a court with a guy with that kind of caliber mm-hmm. player. In terms of my career, I played 2 years of basketball and then, actually also walked onto the baseball team, so it wasn't like I had any guarantees out there, but decided that, and for no good reason, I wasn't, you know, somebody that was going to get drafted or, you know, people were talking about, but decided that I wanted to play baseball, and after my sophomore year, decided just to play one sport.
I have two
follow-ups. Now, really quick, were you roommates with Steve Nash your freshman year? I feel like I read that somewhere.
Yeah, so we lived in the same dorm freshman year. It was a small dorm. He was like two doors down. Sophomore year, same dorm. Junior year, we shared a house. And it was just it was six guys and you know, three rooms. As you can imagine, it was very, very clean. Lots of studying going on in our home.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Any dirt you want to give us on Steve?
I have plenty, but the bad thing is he has an equal amount on me. So we decided to form a truce a long time ago.
That's good.
As you were talking about it, I started thinking about, for whatever reason, the player contract and how many things you guys are not allowed to do. And one of them, I think, is they discourage pickup basketball. And you
absolutely.
Being that good, were you playing pickup when you played? You can tell us now.
I would never do anything to violate my uniform contract, okay. Alex. As a former player rep, I did sneak out and play every now and then. It was for me, and it's obviously a really bad idea. And if you look to Aaron Boone, Aaron Boone was a guy that lost his contract with the Yankees for playing pickup basketball, and unfortunately, somebody dove into his ACL, you know, and hurt him, but. I did for a little bit, especially when I was young, you know, my first few years out of college, you know, probably not the best decision, but it was something that I loved to do.
You made it. And then the second one, you and Steve are kind of coming through. I mean, you're going through the minor leagues, you're getting into the big leagues and starting to establish yourself. And he gets to the Suns and we know 7 seconds or less and all that. How much were you guys following each other? And now he's kind of back in the Bay Area. How much are you guys still friends, I guess?
Yeah, we're still friends. So there were seven of us that came in as freshmen basketball players, and pretty much all of us are still close. We're all in contact with each other. I sent him a text earlier this week just to check in on him, see how he's doing. I usually see him. Our schedules really aren't that compatible, but at least once a year, I was down in Southern California last year around 4th of July. We got a chance to catch up. So it's nice to, when our schedules work out, that we're able to still stay in contact.
I would imagine you guys played a lot of one-on-one, especially your freshman, sophomore years, because you guys were same position. Did you beat up on him some?
You know what's actually probably good for our friendship is that we didn't go against each other that much. So early on, really? We had an upperclassman named John Woolery, who was a heck of a college guard, very good, very underrated, not a lot of people know about him. But Steve was the off guard. So Steve really didn't play point guard until John graduated, which was Steve's junior year. So a lot of times I would guard John, and then, you know, when Steve was a point guard, I wasn't in. So for our friendship and the sake of sharing a house, because the times that we did play in pickup, it would get pretty intense. I mean, both of us are very competitive. So I think it was probably better that we didn't do it all the time.
Well, one thing I'm most fascinated by, and obviously because I do this for a living, is, you know, the behind the scenes stuff in sports. And I was going through your career and looking at everything. And every time I see a trade pop up, that always fascinates me to go back to that time. And I was thinking about it, this is not an old thing, but just when you were playing, there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram. You couldn't find out by seeing a beat writer's tweet, which I know players now do. How did you find out that you got traded to the Giants? And what was that like? How different was it than it would be today?
Yeah, we'll start with similarities. Similarities, I think trade rumors have been around since, you know, the dawns of trade and trade deadlines. So there was always rumors, but I don't think that the traffic and the feedback that you get was as immediate. So to your point right now, if you tweet something that, you know, hey, there's a rumor that, you know, whatever team is interested, you know, let's say it was last year, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks are interested in Madison Bumgarner, everybody would know right then, including everybody in the clubhouse. You know, when I was going through it, you know, if you go back to 2005, the Mariners were kind of on the backside of a really successful run as an organization. They had won 119 games at the American League record in 2001, had played really well. So by 2005, a lot of those guys were getting older and were being traded. So it wasn't necessarily a surprise that that I might get traded. So I kind of had an idea that it was going to happen. But it wasn't a thing where, you know, every couple minutes a new rumor would come through via Twitter or something being retweeted or something like that. So, you know, I didn't have to answer a whole lot of questions. It was one of those situations where, you know, you get asked by your local beat writers, and I would say, hey, you know, your guess is as good as mine. You know, we didn't have all those situations where you could comment on, hey, well, the Giants are interested, or the A's are interested, or this team's interested, mm-hmm. and we know immediately.
By the way, so I looked back at that 2005. I know Alex did too, because we were both talking about it. What happened between the first half of the season with your Seattle and your batting like .275, your slugging percentage was like three something, and then you come to the Giants and you're batting like .360. Slugging over sixth, 14 home runs. You had 51 hits in September. What happened? What changed?
Well, I think a lot of things all came together. One, I was later in my career, and an old teammate of mine, Pat Borders, who World Series MVP with Toronto, I remember he told me, well, you know, a few years before this, he said, you know what, you're at the perfect time in your career where, you know, what you have up here and what you have physically are going to match. And I think that second half of the season was a culmination of, you know, understanding the league, like how people pitch to me, you know, understanding how to get my pitch, and then physically being able to match up with that and having good mechanics and understanding that I don't need to overswing. Like all of those things just kind of fell in a line. I think traditionally I was a better second half player in my career. So, you know, if I had a poor first half, which I normally did, I was bound to have a better second half. It just looked different when changing teams and changing leagues. So your stats kind of start over. People look at those in a fresh light. Mm-hmm. The home runs, I have no explanation for that. That happened then and then only. But it was a great situation for me coming home, still live in the Bay Area, grew up in the Bay Area. My wife's from the Bay Area. Our parents at that time lived in the Bay Area. So for us, it was a homecoming and it was just great to be back home.
I think that's one of the coolest things. And I've talked to Brandon Crawford a lot about 2 years ago when, you know, for about 6 weeks there, he was the hottest hitter in the National League. And he's always trying to find that feeling when you're going through that September. And like Kelly said, I mean, 51 hits in September. Do you feel that something's different? Do you just kind of feel like you're on a different level?
Nothing felt different. Everything just felt really, really easy and really slow. You know, whenever I felt like I wanted to take a pitch, the pitcher would throw a ball. Or if in my mind I was thinking, you know what, he might throw me a changeup, he threw me a changeup, right? And it was a very hittable one. So it was, you know, when anybody describes the zone or being on fire, you know, what they say is always the same. Everything is really slow. I was really relaxed and my mind was really clear. And, you know, when I think back on that time or other times where I was hitting really well, those are always the things that I can remember. I didn't feel different. I wasn't really doing anything different. It just feels like you're in control of everything.
You obviously played parts of 13 seasons with a handful of teams, but when I say the date, October 3rd, 1999, do you remember what happened on that day?
If I had to guess, did I hit an inside the park grand slam?
Yes, against the Yankees. Tell me about that. Do you remember that day?
I do. So I had gotten hurt in September. I had tried to copy Andrew Jones on a catch against the wall, where he did like this really cool Spider-Man thing. And ball was hit over my head as a center fielder. I was thinking, wow, I'm going to do this same thing. And I twisted my ankle. So I missed a chunk of that September. There's no disabled list. I was just kind of working to get back. So the third was my second game back, my first start in quite a while. And my foot still wasn't right. And I hit a ball. And for you to get inside the park home run, either the park has to be big, it has to be quirky, or somebody just falls down, right? So something weird usually happens. So I hit it in Tampa. And I was on a Devil Ray at that time. Devil Ray, not Ray.
Yes, not a Ray.
No. And I hit it to left center, and they kind of have a quirky wall out there. So I believe it was Chad Curtis was playing center field for the Yankees. Bernie had the day off. And it hit the wall and bounced over his head and hugged the center field wall, like going all the way to right center. So as soon as I thought it was a double right when I hit it. As soon as it bounced over his head, I knew that I had a chance. The only thing I had to do was not hurt my foot again, and I was able to do that.
You had to been winded because you just returned to action. That must have been.
Well, I got a shot of adrenaline. I think that's really what saved both my foot and my wind there.
The last question I have for you, and just going back through your career, and you click on those teams on Baseball Reference, you see the photos of some of the players who were the stars of those teams. I mean, Ichiro at the beginning, Bonds. I think one season you played with Pujols and Alex Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Who was the guy who you would watch in games and in batting practice, and it would just kind of blow your mind at how easy they made it look?
Who did I watch? I mean, I watched everybody. I call myself a student of the game. I like to ask a lot of questions. When I was a rookie, and I just mentioned this player, Bernie Williams, was a guy that for the Yankees in 1998, 99, 2000, you know, my first few years in the league as a switch hitter, I was looking at him, a guy that was just a complete hitter. I was not that when I came into the league. I was more of a speed player. I'm still learning how to hit left-handed. And he was a guy that I really felt like was just a complete hitter from both sides of the plate, hit for average, hit for power. So I remember I went and found him one day and just asked him a bunch of questions. And then that just followed me through my career. I had a chance to play with a lot of great players. You mentioned a bunch of them. You know, even like the guys like Fred McGriff, Greg Vaughn, Wade Boggs in my early Devil Ray days were also some great players. But I watched how they handled themselves, how they prepared themselves. And then if they did something in the game, I would always ask them, like, hey, Boggsy, you know, we're facing Roger Clemens. You know, what are you looking for? You know, what are you trying to do in this situation? He did this. What are you thinking? So that was always my thing is, you know, when I play with these guys, that were better than I was, I want to ask him a ton of questions. But you, the second part of your question, the guy that who I was amazed at how easy he made it look, was probably Barry. Barry, and I say this lovingly, it was old Barry, right? He was over 40 when I played with him, but the respect that he commanded at the plate was just amazing. And his mechanics, how simple, how compact they were, just how easy he made hitting look was truly, truly special. But I'll throw one more thing in. I think the player that was probably the best when I played with him, I might be offending some guys, was probably Albert. You know, I got to play with him in 2010. And I remember one day they put up on the screen, like hit the back of his baseball card. it was just a joke. It was like 330, 330, 330, 315. He had a bad year. But you know, the home, just the consistency in the home runs when I played with him was truly outstanding.
That's what I was actually think that year. He was worth like 7.5 WAR the year you played with him. So it's just,
and they thought he was having a down year. I was like, yeah. Are you guys crazy?
Yeah. I was actually in St. Louis covering the Cardinals when he made his debut and his rookie season. So I was there for a couple, you know, three of his first years.
Yeah.
And we knew right away because he was so meticulous with everything he did before a game, his pregame routine. Like, he didn't talk to the media a lot because he had all this extra cuts he had to get in inside the cage, out on BP. Like, he was like really like the ultimate professional when it came to hitting and preparing himself every day for a game. Yeah. All right. Before I let you go, Randy.
That's the same with all great hitters. Like, watching them prepare, like what they did was really fun as a student of the game to be able to play with those guys on that level.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, before I let you go, we've been running all these classic Giants games on our air. If there was one Randy Wynn classic game that you would want to watch back, what would it be?
As a Giant?
Just in your career.
Oh, in my career, wow.
Is there like one game that you like, I'd love to see that again and watch myself?
All of September 2005.
Yeah, I was going to say, do I have to narrow it down? Can I just watch a montage of all my hits in September 2005? Yeah. Would be great. But if I had to narrow it down to one game, I mean, probably my cycle with the Giants. I think that was a pretty fun game. You know, I look for something where I not just base hits, but extra base hits. And obviously getting one of all four types of hits was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. All right, Randy. Well, I have a feeling we're going to have a while before baseball starts again. So you just keep being Professor Wynn, taking care of those kids. Make sure they don't flunk out. You don't want, you know, them to blame dad on bad grades.
We don't need that.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And take care.
Yeah. Good to see you guys. Thanks.
You too.
Got him.
And that's the perfect game. Swing and a miss. The Giants are world champions.
The Giants Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com.
One, two, three. 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.